So we are continuing our walk through the Old Testament. Last week, we read about Abraham, this man that God had called, God had chosen. Out of all the people in the world, he chose Abraham to enter into a special relationship. Abraham was promised a land of his own. He was promised that he would be blessed in order to be a blessing to all the nations of the earth, that he would be the father of many nations, except that for a long time, this father of many nations didn't even have a child of his own. When he was 100 years old, after decades of waiting, Abraham's wife, Sarah, finally gave birth to Isaac. This was the initial fulfillment of God's promise. And just saying that out loud, 100 years old, having a new kid. I mean, my goodness. We read last week about the interaction between God and Abraham, and Abraham and Isaac, when God asked Abraham to sacrifice Isaac as a test, and we explored what kind of test that could have been and some implications for us to think about. So between then and the story we're reading this morning, Isaac got married to a woman from back in Abraham's homeland. Isaac's wife struggled to have a baby too. And then in response to Isaac's prayer for his wife, Rebecca, to be able to conceive, Rebecca gave birth to twins. During the pregnancy, it describes the boys as being at odds, like wrestling in her womb. And she actually prays, like, okay, God, like, what's going on in here, basically? And God said, you know, there's two peoples in your womb. Two peoples are going to come from the children in your womb, and they will be at odds, and the older one and his descendants would serve the younger one and his descendants. That's an interesting word, because that went exactly opposite to how it was supposed to happen in that world. I think the second oldest are the ones that are supposed to be in charge now, right? All in favor? No. No. I have an older sibling, for those who don't know. We're going to pick up the story well after they were born, but Jacob and Esau were born. The story we're picking up, they are now over 40 years old. We know that because it talks about Esau getting married at 40, and it's after that. There's a very old Isaac is starting to plan for his end. And so we're going to pick it up in Genesis 27 and just read a few verses here, the beginning of Genesis 27. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." "Here I am," he answered. Isaac said, "I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your equipment, your quiver and bow, and go out to the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like and bring it to me to eat. So that I may give you my blessing before I die." This old, blind Isaac sends his son, Esau, who is a hunter. He's described as being this big, hairy, outdoors guy who loves to hunt and make food from wild game. And so Isaac sends him out to go and prepare this kind of food and bring it to him so he can eat. And then it says, we just read, "so I may give you my blessing before I die." This translation doesn't really capture the depth of what Isaac wants to bestow on Esau. Some translations say it's that my soul may bless you before I die. This is basically passing on to his son all that it meant to carry forward the family name, the family line, the family blessing from God. Passing along everything that it meant to be a child of Abraham. He's going to pass that along to Esau. Let's pick up the story, 27. We're going to jump down to verse 15. Then Rebecca, this is Isaac's wife, took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which she had in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with goat skins. Then she handed her son Jacob the tasty food and bread she had made. He went to his father and said, "My father." "Yes, my son," he answered. "Who is it?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord gave me success. The Lord your God gave me success," he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, come here so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not. Jacob was notoriously not hairy where Esau was. And so Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau. He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he proceeded to bless him. Jacob, at the behest of his mom, gets dressed up like Esau, covers his arms with hair like Esau, and goes and tricks his father into receiving this deepest blessing. As you can imagine, when Esau came back and went to serve his dad and get this blessing, only to have Isaac say, oh, I thought you were already here, Esau was a little bit upset. Actually, he was extremely angry that this deep soul blessing and all that went with it had been stolen from him. Isaac was distraught. And then at Rebekah's behest, in order to protect Jacob from his brother, Isaac sent Jacob away. He said, you know what, you need to go find a wife, so go back to where your mother is from, go back to the old homeland, and go find yourself a wife. And we pick up the story now in the next chapter 28, starting at verse 10. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth, with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and to the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. These are all the same elements of the blessing that was given to Abraham, the land and the people and the nations. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. There's a million things we could look at in this passage, but I'm just going to focus on one today. Let's look at Jacob for a second. Jacob is not where the person who is receiving this blessing from God is supposed to be. He's supposed to be back in the land that God had promised. God was taking Abraham and his family to the land, and now here he is away from the land. He's in the completely wrong context. He's in the wrong place. Jacob was told he's supposed to be blessed to be a blessing to all the nations. What did Jacob just do? He stole the blessing from his brother. He's doing the exact opposite of what the one who is receiving this blessing from God is supposed to do. He is not the right kind of person. He's in the wrong place, wrong context. He's the wrong kind of person. He's going the wrong direction. He's actually running away from the land God promised to go backwards. It's like everything that God has said, I'm going to do with you, Abraham, follow me. Here's the blessing I'm going to give you. Jacob is like undoing all of these things in this whole story. From a human perspective, everything that God had said he was going to do is going wrong in this story. And yet, God met him there. As soon as Jacob got to where he was trying to stop, he stopped trying to control things. I think even the fact that he was asleep was probably significant, because he was in that place where, for the first time, maybe in a very, very long time, he was open enough to hear God speak. And God met him there and blessed him and affirmed God's faithfulness despite the mess that Jacob was in. If I was planning for how everything would go, if I was God at this point, it would be like, okay, maybe I should just go with Esau. this Jacob guy's really messed this up. It makes sense from, like, he's the oldest. He's supposed to get it. He's just trying to serve his father the way, you know, a good follower of mine should. See my son back there? No. But God doesn't do that. He meets Jacob and offers this blessing, affirms his faithfulness, says, you know what? I know you're going in the wrong direction. I know you've messed things up, but I'm going to meet you here, and I'm going to reaffirm my promise, and I'm not going to leave you until I'm done what I'm doing with you. We often expect God to work in certain ways or to work with certain people. What we expect or who we expect often depends on how we were raised and what we were taught growing up. But we have expectations about how God's going to do what God's going to do and who's God's going to use to do it with. And our expectations can lead us to a couple of different responses. One is we can start to look at other people and be like, oh, God's not that's not the right kind of person. We can start to exclude people because, you know, they're in the wrong context or they're the wrong kind of person or they're going the wrong direction and just dismiss people. The other thing we can often do, and I've seen this a lot, is we can self-exclude because, you know, I'm not from the right context. I don't have the right background. You know, I hear these people talking and they're using this language and I don't understand what it means. Obviously, I'm not the right person. I don't have the right background, the right knowledge, the right experience, the right awareness. So we kind of self-exclude. Or we're not the right kind of person. We know our struggles, and we walk in on Sunday morning, and everybody else, and from our perspective, it's everybody else, has it figured out, and they aren't struggling with anything, but I know what I'm dealing with, so I'm not the right kind of person. You know, if they knew what I was struggling with, they would know that I'm not the right kind of person. If they knew about the addictions that I just haven't been able to kick, they would probably wouldn't even want me in the same room. If they knew the kinds of doubts that I have or the questions I have, man, it's not safe for me to ask them because I know I'm not the right kind of person. Or maybe we're not going in the right direction. You know, we still carry shame from a past that nobody knows, or we're going through a time when we don't feel the energy or joy or presence of God that we once did, or that struggle that we thought we'd kicked a bunch of years ago, it's flared up again. I'm going the wrong direction. We self-exclude for the same reasons that sometimes we look at others and exclude. Here's something I'm convinced is a reality. Most people who feel these things in themselves never express them. They don't express the fears because the biggest fear is that if people find out what's real about me, it's going to, all of my worst imaginations are going to come true. It's going to confirm their biggest fear that they don't belong, that they won't belong, that they'll be excluded. And the sad part is that in a lot of church contexts, that's been the case. People have found out and it's meant people are ostracized, kicked out, pushed away. Thinking about the right context, over the course of my pastoral ministry, I've talked with a number of people who feel they don't belong because, you know, they struggle. Something as simple as, like, you said Genesis. I have no idea where to start looking in this. So I obviously don't fit. Or, you know, they don't understand the language. You know, we sing these songs and they have these spiritual words and I don't understand what they mean. And everybody else is singing and so they obviously do. So I guess I don't really fit. Or they didn't know that the church had specific expectations about maybe what they should or shouldn't wear until someone shamed them for it or criticized them. And whether it's through exclusion of others or self-exclusion, many of us can slide into feeling like we're on the outside or we're less than. And the worst part of it is it's not just in the eyes of people, but because the people around us in church are supposed to represent God, then we feel less than in the eyes of God. We're just not from the right context. We just don't belong. Or, again, not the right kind of person. Others, people carrying things that make them different, whether it be addictions or shame from their past or difficulty understanding or processing things or just whatever it is, feeling like they don't belong. And again, often people who feel like they don't belong say nothing. Many years ago, I had a young man named Adrian. He was a part of a college group that Angie and I ran. Adrian had Asperger's and was on the autism spectrum. He was smart. He was social. But he processed things very differently than the majority of the group because the majority of the group were animators and illustrators. They were artists. They thought in nebulous ideas. And so you have this guy, one guy who just, he saw the world completely differently than everybody else. The group still embraced him. He was included in everything. He participated for a couple of years. He was baptized at the church. It was actually really beautiful to watch. And then one day he came to me and out of nowhere said, you know, I don't think this is for me. I want it to be, but I just don't think it is. He shared that even though he always felt welcomed by the group and included, he didn't think God was for him. Because everybody else around him in this group spoke about their relationship with God and in almost exclusively emotional and emotive language. He didn't feel emotion the same way. He couldn't relate to or even understand when everybody else expressed how they related to God. And if he couldn't love and relate to God like, well, everybody else did, then Christianity must not be something, it must be something he couldn't be a part of. He felt like he couldn't participate, like he didn't belong because he wasn't the right kind of person. People carry things like that. Most never say anything about it. Or we self-exclude or exclude others because we aren't going in the right direction. And this is something I have heard and seen probably the most in churches. You know, the number of people who feel they have no place with God because of what they've done or addictions they're dealing with or their ongoing struggles with sin or the number of people I've met who have been told they don't belong for those same reasons, either explicitly or implicitly. In the story of Jacob, we see a man who embodies all three of these things. He's in the wrong place, the wrong kind of person. He's a liar. He's a deceiver. He's stolen from his father and brother. He's heading in the wrong direction from what God wanted his people to be. And what's God's response? God shows up to Jacob in this wrong place, to the wrong person, going the wrong direction, and says, I am the Lord your God, the God of your father, Abraham, and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and the east, to the north and the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you everywhere you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. He meets Jacob there where he is, and he blesses him. He reaffirms a promise that's based not on Jacob, not on Jacob's goodness, not on Jacob's ability to do everything right, but on God's faithfulness. That's what it's about. We tend to limit God. To limit where and when and with whom God's going to work. But over and over again in the Bible, God shows up and does something beyond the limits we would put on God. Over and over through history, God shows up and does something beyond the limits that we would put on God. And maybe instead of being surprised and instead of putting those limits up, we should open ourselves to God doing it again. And again, in our time, in our places, and in our lives, if we'll stop running for long enough to hear from God and hear God remind us that it's his faithfulness that is the key. I'm reminded that the majority of what got Jesus in trouble during his time on earth, what got him judged by the religious leaders, was because he went to the wrong places, hung out with the wrong people, and ultimately, from what they thought the Messiah was going to do, the cross was the exact wrong direction. The Messiah was supposed to conquer Rome and build this kingdom, not go to a cross. Jesus modeled for us in the real world what we see God doing with Jacob in this story. In the earliest days of covenant, Glenn introduced something that covenant has always tried to be about. The phrase, if you've been here a while, you've heard this, meet people where they are and walk with them. This is a great aspiration. I think doing it really well requires that we first recognize that this is God's way of being in the world. God's way of being with us. God meets us where we are and walks with us. He's done it since the earliest days of, you know, this story of God's rescue plan for the world. He did it with Jacob. He did it through Jesus, and God is doing it with you. So let's leave the door open. Rather than excluding others based on these things or self-excluding, maybe we should slow down. Listen for God's voice. It isn't about whether you're in the right place or the right kind of person or heading the right direction. It's about what God is ready to do in your life and through your life. God's faithfulness is bigger than these things. A final note about Adrian's story. Adrian shared what was going on in his mind, and we were able to meet regularly over many weeks. During those meetings, I got to understand him a little bit better, and we began to explore how God and how to understand God and how to connect with God in a way that he could understand and get excited about. He understood and resonated with ideas like loyalty and obedience and sacrifice and commitment. And just because he was wired differently doesn't mean he couldn't relate to God. God met him differently. He met him where he was, and it was good. Let's pray. God, I thank you that you are a God who is big enough to meet us where we are. Even when we find ourselves going in the wrong direction, even when we feel like we don't fit and belong, God, help us to keep working at this aspiration to meet people where they are and to walk with them. But more than that, help us to keep our eyes on you, the one who actually does it. God, I just pray that we would be encouraged. That we don't need to be perfect. You long for us to live the full and abundant life, but you meet us where we are and walk with us until we get there, and you will never leave us or forsake us. In Jesus' name, amen.